Good morning. Today's Daf and Tanya, Lamed Aleph. We are here at the end of the Masechta. We're finishing up the fourth parak of the Masechta. And because there are four prokim, that means that we're finishing the Masechta. And so we just have a little bit more to go over the course of this morning. We just have the end of the Mishnah to explain. There are 2 days that are really happy. So one of them is Yom Kippur, and the other one is Tu B'Av. And the Gemara is going to wonder, Yom Kippur is a happy day? That's interesting. Tu B'Av being a happy day? That's interesting also. What's Tu B'Av? Okay, so that needs a little bit of clarification. That's what the Gemara is going to do, and that's what we're going to be doing this morning, finishing up the Masechta. I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Yomim Tovim LeYisrael, Kechamisha Asar B'Av, Uchiyom HaKippurim. Okay. Bishlam Yom HaKippurim, so the Gemara says right away that Yom Kippur, so that I get. Yom Kippur being a happy day, that's obvious. So, Mishum Deis Beislichol Mechila, Yom Shinitna Bo Luchos Achrono. So, it's a day of forgiveness. Because Baruch Hu is Mechaper, the entire Jewish people. We spent the Masechta talking about this idea. On top of that, it also coordinates with the day in which we were given the Luchos Achrono. So, Rashi over here goes through the math. And I encourage you, please, look at Rashi inside. Rashi is going to go together and take us through from the time that the Luchos were broken, which we already established, is going to be the 17th day of Tammuz that we already established. And then, if you go from there, and you look at the trajectory of Moshe going up again, so you'll see that he comes back down with the Luchos Achronos on the 17th day of, on the 10th day of Tishrei. I'm not going to go with the kind of detail that Rashi goes through, but just to get a good outline of what's happening over here, is that Moshe really goes up on three separate occasions. He goes up the first time, which we already described, on the sixth day of on the sixth day of Sivan, and from there he spends the first 40 days up there. Comes back down on the 16th day of Tammuz. Comes back down on the 17th day of Tammuz. Breaks the Luchos on the 17th day of Tammuz, and then he goes up again another 40 days. But that's for Tefillah, for davening on behalf of the Jewish people. And then what's going to happen is he goes up for another 40 days, and that's in order to be mekabel the Luchos Achronos. If you take those 120 days in total and follow it on the calendar, so you're going to see that it comes down now with the Luchos Achronos on the 10th day of Tishrei. The numbers work, the math works. See Rashi over here for a description of that. So anyway, so it's a day where the Jewish people were totally forgiven on Chet HaEgel, and there's no clear indication of total forgiveness, more than the fact that we actually have the Luchos to show for it. So that day also is Yom Kippur, day of Slicha Mechila. So you see how there's two days of coordinate. So the Gemara. So the Gemara says, I certainly know and I understand how Yom Kippur is a happy day. In other words, when all your sins are forgiven, so good, we're exonerated. So Ela Tetzvah Ba'av Ma'ihi, but what about Tu Ba'av? And that day being a day of joy, so what's that? So I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So for that, now the Gemara is going to give no less than six different explanations of what exactly makes Tu B'Av such an exciting day. There really is on the calendar as we know it, meaning the one provided to the one where the Torah goes through all the Moados. So there is really nothing specific and unique about Tu B'Av. It's just simply another day on the calendar. So what exactly occurred on that day that makes it now historically a really happy day? So, and when you see six different answers given in the Gemara, so it means to say, generally speaking, that there's no one event on that day that makes it so happy, but you take these six events and you put them together. I'm not really sure that if each of the Shitas are disagreeing with the other Shita, maybe it could really be the combination of all six of these events, whatever the case is, but there are six events that the Gemara tracks and traces as being connected to the 15th day of Av. And they are, no, we don't say Tachana. No. So, and they are as follows. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Yom Shehutra Shvatim Lavo Zebezeh. So, you look at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, right? We just went through it together prior to the daf this morning. So you look at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, and you're going to see over there where the Torah states very clearly that, in order to go into Eretz Yisrael successfully, conquering Eretz Yisrael, dividing Eretz Yisrael, making sure that Shvatim are divided appropriately. So, you have to make sure that the women marry within a shevet, meaning if the women are marrying outside of a shevet, so then it's going to turn into a mess, into a huge mess, because what's going to end up happening is that the husband inherits his wife's estate. If his wife is inheriting the estate of their father, let's say, for example, Benot Slavchad. So if the wife is inheriting the estate of the father, and then the wife marries somebody who is from a different shevet, and then he inherits her, So now you can see how property lands are going to be going from one shevet to another shevet. And so to keep everything nice, neat, and clean, so you're going to be marrying within your shevet. That's a psukim at the end of Sefer Bamidbar and the Parshas Maasai. So with that stated, so now that means that your shidduch pool is going to be a really limited shidduch pool. You can only marry people within your shevet. So my drosh, they had a drasha. And that drasha is that this prohibition of the Torah of not marrying somebody outside of your shevet is only going to be for generation number one. Only for the door that goes into Eretz Yisrael. But from that point going forward, so you're allowed to marry somebody from another shevet. How do they darshan? So live notes of chad v'chulei. Dvar zeh, lo naug ela bedor zeh. Okay, so they had a drasha. And now, what does this have to do with Tu B'Av? So I guess we're going to have to say that the drasha occurred on Tu B'Av, meaning because the allowance to marry is not for later. In other words, only after they had entire Tisrael, mm-hmm. But in terms of when they made the drasha, so the drasha was made actually on Tu B'Av itself. Okay, so that's one event that occurred, so they darshan. And therefore allowing people to marry outside of their shevet. Number two, I'm Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Nachman, Yom Shuto Shevet Ben Yam Lavo Bekal. The Gemara points to another historical event where marriage was permitted. And this takes us to the end of Sefer Shoftim. The last three prakim of Sefer Shoftim so are really really difficult to go through. There was a civil war amongst the Jewish people. It started with a really heinous crime that was committed. I'm not going to go through the details right now, but a real heinous crime that was committed. Shevet Binyamin was asked to extradite the perpetrators. Shevet Binyamin refused. There was civil war. Anyway, there was not only spilled blood, but a lot of bad blood between Shevet Binyamin and all the other Shvatim. All the other Shvatim basically put an excommunication on Shevet Binyamin, and they prohibited any one of their daughters to marry anyone from Shevet Binyamin. Okay? And Shevet Binyamin at least temporarily was excommunicated. So again, what happened over here at the end of Sefer Shoftim, this is now the last perek, the 21st perek of Sefer Shoftim, is that an allowance was given that you can marry somebody from Shevet Binyamin. And so this occurred again on Tu B'Av. Shenemar v'ish Yisrael nishba b'mitzvah lemar ish mimenu lo yiten bitah lebinyamin liisha my drosh amarav mimenu v'lo mibenenu, and it was only for that generation, but it was not for the next generation. So an allowance was given, and again the allowance wasn't immediate, meaning the allowance was only for the next generation. But still, though, the allowance, the decision came down on Tu B'Av. Okay, so in the first two explanations, there really is no good, clear indication why specifically Tu B'Av, meaning it's just simply a day in the calendar. But in terms of why specifically that time of year, so there's really no indication. Although in explanations 1 and 2, obviously the common denominator is that marriages were allowed. Marriages that were forbidden are now allowed. Okay, which certainly is consistent with what happened on that day. In other words, what goes on that day, and that is that it's a big shidduch scene. Right, the largest singles event in the history of the Jewish people. I made that up in terms of, you know, giving it a superlative. I don't know if it's true, but in other words, but that's really what it was. So in light of the fact that what perpetrated that day to be such a joyful day is that marriages were allowed. So you see how, or in other words, the history of the day fits into the theme of the day. So that part works out really good. The Gemara gives other explanations. Four other explanations. Rabbi Bar Chanan, Rav Yochanan, Amar Yom Shekala Bo Meisei Midbar. The generation of the desert. So they stopped dying that day. Dor Midbar no longer died. Amar Amar Shelo Kala Meisei Midbar Lo Hayu Dibor Im Moshe. Shenemar Vayhi Kasher Tamu Kol Anshei Melchama Lamoz Vaydaber Hashem Eli Hayah Dibor. And on top of that, as long as there were people dying in the Midbar, so the communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe was muted, right? Much like my communication with the people on Zoom, right? Right? Too soon for that joke. So there was no clear communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe for those years. Okay, there is an interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says that Moshe basically became like another Navi during those years. He didn't have the kind of nevuah which we normally think of when it comes to Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Lo kam Yisrael kamoshe od. In other words, there was no other Navi. But for those years where, from the Chet HaMeraglim until the last people die in the Dor HaMidbar, so Moshe basically was like another Navi. Rashi says that over here. I know there's a lot of discussion about that Rashi, in terms of, that's normally not how we think about Moshe. We think about Moshe as being the prototype Navi, not just the prototype, but nobody matched him in terms of his nevuah. Okay, anyway, that's interesting. But the Argamar's point over here is that they stopped dying on Tu B'Av. Now, why did they stop dying on Tu B'Av? What does that mean? So Rashi over here gives a lot of detail. And again, I'm just going to paraphrase Rashi. I'm not going to read the Rashi inside. But basically what Rashi tells us is as follows. So every year after the Chet HaMeraglim, so the Jewish people knew that they were dying in the desert. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them that was part of the Onesh of the Chet HaMeraglim. And so they were going to die. When did they die? So they died in Tisha B'Av. Meaning every Tisha B'Av from Chet HaMeraglim going forward, so that was the day in which the Dor HaMidbar is going to die. They all died in one Tisha B'Av? No. They died in shifts over the Tisha B'Av. And then just to make this more horrific, more of a nightmare. So what they would do, Rashi describes over here, Rashi's quoting Midrashim. Rashi here is quoting a Brice, I should say. So what they would do is that they would dig their graves every year prior to Tisha B'Av. On Erev Tisha B'Av, on Lel Tisha B'Av, they would go into the grave. And then a Baskol would come out the next morning saying, whoever's alive, just simply walk out of the graves. And that's what they would do in every Tisha B'Av. When they got to the last Tisha B'Av, when they got to the last Tisha B'Av, presumably that means to say that it was there was no longer a Gzera that year. Now, at this point in time, I'm just asking a question. I myself am not perfectly clear. Did they know it was the last Tisha B'Av? Meaning, if it's 40 years and you count, so didn't they know it was the last Tisha B'Av? Like, why did they go into the graves that particular year? Okay, so that's my own lack of understanding. But regardless, the Rashi describes over here that in that last year, so they went into the graves. The Bas Kol came out and said, "Whoever's alive, come out!" And everybody came out. So that was an indication that's it. In other words, the onish is now officially over, and the Dor HaMidbar, whoever was supposed to die, in fact died. Rashi points out that this is now Tisha B'Av, ninth day of Av. So in other words, for the last 40 years, they knew that not everybody was to survive. So they thought for a little bit now, maybe our dates are wrong, meaning maybe it's not Tisha B'Av. In other words, remember, back then the calendar was established by Urias HaChodesh. I don't know, maybe it's really the eighth day of Av, right? In of itself, by the way, I'm sorry for asking another question, but in of itself, that's really difficult to understand how they even thought that. Meaning, even if Beis Din is wrong, we know when it comes to Kiddush HaChodesh, so the date of the month is whatever Beis Din decides. So what does that mean, maybe it's the eighth day of Av? Meaning, if Beis Din decided that Rosh Chodesh Av is in fact Rosh Chodesh Av, even if from a lunar perspective, they're wrong, but doesn't matter. Okay, again, I'm just my lack of understanding, regardless. And on top of that, right, on top of that, they also heard the Baskol, in this case, they didn't hear the Baskol. Anyway, the way Rashi describes it, what they did now is that they said, well, maybe we're wrong. Maybe it's not the ninth day of Av. Maybe it was the eighth. So the next night, they did the same thing. And they continued doing that until the 15th day of Av. Now, for those of you who follow the moon, who track the moon, so you know by the 15th day of the month, so what are you looking at? You're looking at a full moon. So by the 15th day of the month, they at that point in time recognized, oh, there is no way that it can no longer possibly be the ninth day of Av. Meaning we're at the midpoint of the month already. Okay, it's over. And so that recognition, that realization comes now on the 15th day of Av. So that day was now established to be a day of Simcha, in which they're no longer going to die. This explanation does a really good job now connecting specifically why it came out on Tu B'Av, meaning that's really good. Although this explanation no longer now connects us to the theme of the day, right? The theme of the day, Shiduchim, right? The first two explanations did a great job connecting it to the theme of the day. This explanation, although does a great job in terms of explaining why specifically Tu B'Av, but then in terms of connecting it to why it's connected to Shiduchim, okay, that's where it's a little bit weaker.
Rabbi, don't you Ula, shirach between the Jewish people and Hashem, the intimacy came back.
You could say that. It's a loose connection. It's not a great connection. The Ula Amar Yom Shebito Hoshe Ben Ela Pruzdi Yosha Hoshev Yeravam Ben Navat Al Hadrachim Shalola Yishalo Yalu Yisrael La Regal. Additionally, the Gemara says that it was the day in which Hoshea ben Ela opened it up. Yeravam ben Nevat, we already discussed him just a couple of days ago in the daf. So Yeravam ben Nevat closed all highways that went from the north down to the south. In other words, that in order to successfully, in other words, I'm not saying this is a positive thing, this is obviously not, but in order to successfully break off from the south, from Yerushalayim, from the base of Mikdash. So what he had to do is he had to set up his own regal, his own Aliyah regal. And so what he also did is he closed off the highways that connected the north from the south, so that no one can pass over. He created, so to say, a Mason-Dixon line, right? So that nobody would go from the north down to the south. So that created this connection between them. And so, according to Ula, and this is now going to be our fourth explanation, so what happens now in Tu B'Av is that Hoshea ben Ela, a later king, went ahead and he opened it up again. And he removed all the guards, all the sentries that were blocking the path from the north down to the south. That's number four. Right? I don't know if I read it. Shahoshiv Yeravim in Nevada, Al-Drachim Shalom Yalu Yisrael Arego. The Amar Le'ezesh Yerze Yaleh. And he gave everybody a choice, meaning he didn't tell everybody you have to go to Yerushalayim. That obviously would have been the best. That would have been the most correct, but at least he opened it up. Okay. Number five, Rav Mastan. We're on the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, and we're going over the fifth possible explanation of what the significance of Tu B'Av is. Rav Mastan, Amar Yom Shinatnu Haruge Beita Lekvura. So it was the day in which Haruge Beisar was allowed to be buried. Amar Rav Mastan. On the day in which it was allowed, they were allowed to bury those that were those who were killed in Beitar. So tiknu biyavna atov v'ametiv. So they instituted the bracha of atov v'ametiv. Hatov shelo yisrichu, and the bracha of atov v'ametiv. Hatov is a reference to Kadosh Baruch Hu being good, in that the bodies did not decompose or decay, and v'ametiv shenitnu lekvura. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is metiv, and that he allows them finally and eventually to be buried. Okay, so this takes us to the following. So we already went over this a couple days ago, but now the Gemara over here is obviously making reference to it again. So Haruge Beitar, so the way the Rambam describes it. So this is the revolt that the Jews did post Chorban Bayis Sheni. So in approximately the years 132, 133 of the Common Era, right? The way we look at the calendar, it's going to be about 60 years after Chorban Bayis Hamikdash. The Rambam describes it more like 50 years. Okay, in terms of the dating, I'll let the historians worry about it. But in terms of the event, so we're basically all looking at the same thing, and that is a revolt was led against the Romans, thinking at this point in time we're ready to reconquer Yerushalayim, we're ready to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and we're ready to appoint a Mashiach. They did appoint a Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva was of the firm belief that this general, his name is Bar Kochva, Bar Kuziva, was in fact now going to be the Melech HaMashiach. And he was going to lead the Jews back into Eretz Yisrael. I mean, they were there, but back to building the Beis Hamikdash. Good. So that we're all familiar with. The unfortunate conclusion of that event is that they were not successful. The Romans destroyed them, killed them all, killed Bar Kochva, killed Rabbi Akiva, tortured Rabbi Akiva to death. Okay, this part we're familiar with. So and the Romans wanted to tell the Jewish people, do not do this again. And the message and the communication in which they told them not to do this again is they said, all the people that we killed in Beitar, the Rambam describes thousands upon thousands of soldiers, of Jewish soldiers, were killed in Beitar. So they said, we're not going to allow you to bury them. Okay, that was cruel, but it was a message that the Romans wanted to send to the Jewish people. Do not try this again, right? You try this again, and this is what you're going to look at again. In other words, we will deal with you in this kind of cruel manner. So at that point in time, a nace. Right, a change of natural order, in which obviously when bodies are left unburied, so they're going to start decomposing, and really quickly, a couple days already, and they're already going to look at decomposition. Our Gemara over here does not tell us how long a period we're looking at in terms of the bodies not decomposing, meaning regardless of how big a miracle we're talking about. In other words, let's assume, I don't know if I'm right, but I'll say it, the here's what we know. We know Beitar was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. So, and on the 15th, they were allowed to be buried. So if it's the same year, and that's an assumption I'm making, I don't know if I'm right, but if it's an assumption we're making, so we are talking about a week later, from the 9th day of Av to the 15th day of Av. But I don't know if I'm right. Maybe it could be that they were left unburied for more than a year, for 2 years, three, I don't know. But regardless, though, the point is still going to be the same, meaning natural laws of the world is that the bodies would start decomposing within a day, 2 days for sure. They'll start decomposition, and the bodies did not decompose. Good. That part we know. And then on top of that, what we also just learned together is that the Chachamim were misakin a bracha, specifically the bracha v'atov v'ameitiv. They instituted that bracha to be said, meaning what it sounds like from our Gemara is that there was no such bracha v'atov v'ameitiv, and they instituted that bracha. Now, if you look at Tosfos over here, and the Gemara in Brachos also gives us this indication as well. It's not just the standard bracha of Tov Ameitiv when we experience something which is good, but specifically the bracha at the end of benching. Look at Tosfos right over here. Tiknu b'yavna Tov Ameitiv perush b'birchos amazon. So mishum hachi tiknu yoster alayayin Tov Ameitiv tfei mi b'shar dvarim lefisha ayu kamo ged b'kerem v'lo nisrachum. So and then on top of that, so it was instituted now to be said under two occasions. One, at the end of benching. Now, at the end of benching, by the way, right? Do you hear Atova Ameitiv at the end of benching? So it's an elongated version of Atova Ameitiv at the end of benching. So even though, right, that it doesn't sound that way, but that's what it is. So, right, et cetera. So that's a longer version of Atova Ameitiv. And on top of that, also it's instituted when you're drinking wine, when you have the Gemara in Brachos discusses, they have a better cup of wine, but in other words, it's instituted over wine. Okay, it definitely requires an explanation in terms of why specifically it's attached to benching. It definitely requires an explanation, what does it have to do anything with wine? Meaning, given that we now know the history of the Bracha in terms of why it was instituted. So Tosfos over here makes some sort of cryptic reference in terms of an explanation. I'm not going to write. It could be on another occasion, not today. I could provide, I can cite sources in terms of providing other explanations. But anyway, just I'm putting it out there. It definitely needs a consideration in terms of why specifically these days why this bracha was attached to both benching and to wine. Okay, and all this occurred on Tu B'Av that we were allowed to bury Haruge Beitar. And then finally, number six. Number six, Rabbi Rav Yosef Dami Tavayu, Yom Shepasku, Melichros Eitzim Lama'aracha. A day in which we no longer cut wood for the Maracha. We know that in order for the Beis HaMikdash to operate so, you need fuel. I don't mean that in any kind of allegory, meaning literally, you need fuel. In other words, you need fire on the Mizbeach in order to burn the Karbanos. So they would cut wood. They would cut wood during the summertime. Summertime months are the best time to cut wood because what would happen during the summertime is after you cut the wood, so now the wood can dry out nice and good. And so you'll have good wood to burn on the fire. If, however, in the cold months, there's no point in cutting the wood because that wood is really not going to dry. The moisture in that wood is just not going to dry. And basically, when did they stop cutting wood? On Tu B'Av, they stopped cutting wood. Because what is Tu B'Av? It's basically the end of the summer, thereabouts. And so the days start getting shorter, meaning we're entering into the fall, and it's at that point in time, there's really no good point in cutting wood because the wood is not going to dry. The wood is still going to be both moist, and also on top of that, says Rashi right over here, it's still going to have worms in it. We know that wood that has worms in it is puzzle to be put up onto the Mizbech. And so as a result of that, So now what? So now Tu B'Av becomes a happy day. What are the connections? So over here, you look at Rashi. You don't get much out of Rashi in terms of explaining what's the connection to stopping cutting wood and it turning into such a happy day. But the Rashbam, the Gemara Baba Basra, our Gemara that we're learning right here at the end of the Masechta Tanis is the same Gemara as Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph. We also looked it up this morning as well. Anyway, the Gemara Baba Basra, so you look at the Rashbam over there, why is it so exciting? So the Rashbam says, because it's a Siyum, meaning you completed a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to get wood for the Mizbech on the Beis HaMikdash. On Tu B'Av, the mitzvah now is completed. When you complete doing a mitzvah, it's a Yom Simcha, it's a happy day. This Rashbam is basically used to describe a Siyum. right? It happens to be that it's a perfect way to end the Masechta, because this really is the source of making a sum when completing a Masechta. Meaning, when you're completing a Masechta, you finish the mitzvah of Limud Torah. There really is no end to the mitzvah of Limud Torah. The mitzvah of Limud Torah continues even after you finish a Masechta, but you finish a section. We finish a section. So therefore, you should have a sium. Quite ironic, by the way, that we're not going to have a sium, but neither here nor there. That's just a criticism on myself. But nevertheless, though, that's the Yom Simcha of no longer cutting wood. Continuing now in our Gemara, Yom Shepasko Melech Rosetim Lamaracha, Did Tanya, Rabbi Elazar Gadol Omer, Mechamisha Asar Ba'av, Ve'elech, Tashash Kocha Shochama. The sun is no longer strong. Eveloya Korte Meitim Lamarach, Lafishen Yaveshim. We no longer cut wood because they no longer can dry properly. And so therefore, that's it. In other words, we finished cutting the wood. Obviously, with that in mind, they're probably going to have to make sure that they cut enough wood to last them through the rest of the season. Amar Rav Menashe v'karile Yom Tabar Magal. And oh, by the way, you know that name, the date is called Yom Tabar Magal, right? The day that the axe is broken, meaning we no longer cut wood. Okay, so the day was given a nickname. Nickname does not have lasting power. Right, I haven't heard anyone describe Tu B'Av as Yom Tagar Magal. But of course, without a base of Mikdash, it kind of makes sense. Mikan ve'elech the Mosif Yosef v'delom Mosif Mai. Sorry, u'delom Mosif Ye'asef. And the Gemara says now, the Gemara is just making a tangential point, but nights are starting to get longer, meaning you're starting to go into the fall. So now, as the season changed, obviously, so we go from the short summer nights to now the longer fall nights and even the longer winter nights. What should you be doing with those extra nights and the extra hours of the night? So the Gemara says it's obvious. Well, it's funny. The Gemara doesn't say it super clearly. The Gemara just simply says, V'kol mikan ve'elech demosif Yosef. So you need to add. So what is the Gemara making reference to? Rashi says the Gemara is making reference to Limud HaTorah, meaning now you're home at night and you have extra hours at night. So what you should be doing with those extra night hours, you should be learning Torah. The Rambam speaks about the unique nature of learning Torah specifically at night. Obviously, it's a mitzvah Yom HaVelayla, the Gisa Bo Yom HaVelayla. We're supposed to be thinking about Torah both during the day and during the night, right? The mitzvah of learning Torah should be all the time. But in terms of learning at night, there's something unique and special about learning Torah at night. So anyway, so now that we're going into the fall, we're going into the winter, and you have longer night hours, so then, for sure, you should be spending those extra hours learning. And the Gemara says is that if you do so, that's great. And called the low mosif, but if you don't take advantage of those extra hours of the night not learning, yay, I'm safe. And the Gemara says, what does that mean? So, Tani Rav Yosef, my yay, I'm safe, I'm Rav Yosef, tikbere ime. So you will die prematurely, right? The Gemara here really does not mince any words. The Gemara really speaks strongly about what would be in the event that you are not spending those extra times learning. Why specifically does the Gemara say that your mother's going to bury you? No, right? What's the connection between the mother and not learning? Okay, that's also just I'll raise it as a point. I do have a suggestion, but not for now. I do have a thought, but okay. Shebehem benos Yerushalayim, Tana Rabban, and the Gemara here is going to finish up the Masechta, going over what exactly it's going to be looking like in terms of this major Shidduch event. So Tana Rabban, Masmach Shalas Mibas Kohen Gadol. So first of all, everyone's borrowing clothing. In other words, we don't want to make anyone feel bad. There are going to be women out there, single women out there who don't have clothing, so everyone's going to be borrowing clothing. So, but a bas melech, so she's also going to be borrowing, not because she needs to borrow, but in other words, part of the way you make nobody feel bad is by having everyone borrow. So even the bas melech is going to borrow, but shalos mi bas kohen. So she's going to be borrowing from the bas kohen, meaning it's still, in other words, she has to maintain the dignity of being the bas melech, so she can't just simply borrow from anybody. Fine. So she'll borrow from the bas kohen and bas kohen gadol, I should say, and bas kohen gadol mi bas gan. And the Bas Kohen Gadol is going to be borrowing from the daughter of the deputy, Uvaskan Mibas Mashoch Mechama. And you see how we're going down the list over here in terms of ranks. So Uvas Mashoch Mechama Mibas Kohen Hedjot. Okay, fine. So within the both the monarchy and the Kohanim, so even though everyone's borrowing, but still, you have to still be aware of where you are in your ranking. and so you borrow somebody who's just below you. Everyone's going to be lending clothing to one another, so no one's going to be embarrassed. Every clean has to be tovel. And Amar Rabbi Elazar afilo mikupalim u'menachim mikufsa. And even though we just took this this outfit right out of the packaging, meaning it came straight. We just went to the mall. We just bought it. Okay, right, or whatever. However, they purchased their clothing back in the day. In other words, it doesn't need to be tovled, but nevertheless, again, we want nobody to be embarrassed. So therefore, it's going to be equal all around. Everyone's going to borrow. Everyone's going to tovel their clothing in the mikvah. Benos Yisrael Yosef Zecholos Bekramim. And now the Gemara goes on to describe over here that they're going to be dancing in the vineyard. Tana Misha'in Lo Isha Nifne L'Sham. And then the Gemara quotes a brisa. And that is, who's going to be there? The single men are going to be there, right? Married men, it's not a good idea to go. It's we could say it much stronger than that. We could say it's also for married women, married men to go there. But the whole point over there is that it's for shiduchim. It's to be mezavik, men and women together. So single ladies invited, single men are invited. That's it. That's the extent of your invitation list.
The Mishnah implies it's happening on Yom Kippur also.
I'm unclear. You raised it. I'll say it out loud. Right? Is this event also occurring on Yom Kippur? So David asks. I'm not sure. I'm unclear. In other words, and the Gemara says that it's a happy day because it's Yom Slicha Mechila. So from that Gemara that we started off our morning, it sounds like that the singles event did not occur in Yom Kippur. I'm not sure. Okay. And Miuchaso Shebehem Ayu Omrim Bachor, Tan Rabbanan, and the Gemara quotes Abraisa, Yefefio Shebehem Ayu Omros. So what would the beautiful one say? So Tanue Nechem Leyofi, Sheini Sheel Leyofi. So they would say, look, we're attractive, and that's, you know, in terms of Shiduchim, that's, you know, right. I've been doing a lot of this lately. So it's, you don't put that on the resume, but it kind of speaks for itself. And so fine. So Miuchaso Shebehem Ayu Omros, now, in terms of those who have Yichus, so tenua inechem lamishpach lefishen isha elo levnechem. I'm sorry, elo levanim. So, and those who have yichus, so good. So they could tout their yichus. That you could put on the resume. Although nowadays, thankfully, people don't put that on the resume. But anyway, but if you have yichus, that's great. And michu aroshabahem ayu omros. So now, let's say you don't have beauty and you don't have yichus. So what are you going to do? So you just simply say, k'chu mechem l'shem shamayim. So what you say is, look, the getting married is a mitzvah, and it's good. And in other words, you marry me, and it's going to be l'shem shamayim. So uvavat tit arenu bezuhuvim. Now, in terms of beauty, so what you'll do is you'll buy us nice clothing, and we'll get dressed up in nice clothing and jewelry, and it'll work. Amar ula bira amar Rebbe Lazar ati da kashbar chul asos machul letzadikim. So we talked about dancing in circles. So. The Gemara ends off the Masechta with the following piece of Agarata. Eventually, ultimately, so there is going to be a circle made for the Tzaddikim. V'hu yoshev b'nehem began Eden. And what it sounds like is that the Shechina is going to be at the center of the circle. V'chol echav echem are be'etzbo. Everyone's going to be pointing their finger from their vantage point in the circle. Shenemar v'amar b'yam ahu yinei lukin ezek yivin alo v'yoshin ezeh Hashem kivilano nagil v'nitzbechab v'shu aso. Okay, so the strong point to end off with in terms of the Masechta fitting into the circle that we just described, the dancing that's done on Tu B'Av, Hajnach B'Shosh HaPrakim, V'Slik Olam Masechta Tanis, and that is the end of our Masechta Mazel Tov for all those who completed the Masechta.